Diary of Doom.
What's going on, Heshers? This is the latest entry in the Diary of Doom as we look back on the rich history of doom metal and its sister sounds based on the recounted tales of its fanatics. Every week we will have a different guest to spin their yarn. But before we get into that, please follow us on Instagram at Diary of Doom. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Diary of Doom. And of course, please subscribe and listen to the podcast on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Diary of Doom. This will be up on Spotify and iTunes probably within the next couple of months or so. And if you have a question or you just feel like giving me shit, you can fire that off to diaryofdoom1968@gmail.com. And big news is that this is the first episode we're recording of 2020. I might have mentioned on the last episode, but we are going to weekly format now as opposed to bi-weekly. Just had to get into the swing of things and whatnot. And our first guest of the year is a member of local New York City doom metal band, Ken Wohlrab.
Hey, Dylan. Thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks. And I did say the last name correct, right?
You did get it right, yeah.
All right, cool. Just wanted to make sure and get that out of the way. But Ken is in Eternal Black. They're a three-piece doom metal outfit from Brooklyn specifically, right?
Yeah, myself and Hal, our bass player, from Brooklyn. Our drummer Joe is actually out from Long Island. So, but
okay.
we say we're from New York City since we're kind of from a bunch of different boroughs.
Gotcha. I got to be honest. I googled you guys just to kind of get some more background on your history and whatnot. And you're kind of hard to find on the internet. I got to be honest with you. There's not as many Eternal Black interviews as I thought there was going to be out there, unless I'm just looking in the wrong place. So I unfortunately don't know too much about your background.
Okay. I mean, there's not, you know, it's not like there's an extensive old history there. I mean, we've been around since 2015, and really everything has been built around what we've done in pretty much the last 5 years. But I think even within those 5 years, we've done a heck of a lot. You know, I was at the end of this year, I was sort of tallying up everything I had done over the past decade. And for Eternal Black, we've done 2 studio albums, 1 live album, 1 EP, you know, and that includes both vinyl and CD versions and cassettes and everything else. So we've been doing quite a bit in that short period of time.
Going before Eternal Black came around, you know, what's your musical background? Like, how did you first get into all this?
You know, you could go all the way back to Black Sabbath, which I think just about anybody you talk to on this podcast would probably start with Black Sabbath. But, you know, the funny thing is Black Sabbath just considered themselves a blues band.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, doom music and what we call classic doom music, like, for me, and this won't come as any shocker to anybody who's heard our music, it starts with The Obsessed.
Right.
And discovering Wino and the guys and specifically the Church Within album. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of ground zero for me. And that, you know, once I started digging into Wino's history, and then as, you know, that was probably back in the 90s when I first heard that. So then as he progressed and was doing things like Spirit Caravan after that, The Hidden Hand, all of that stuff, I just ate that stuff up. That was so in my wheelhouse. At the same time, there was the explosion of the Man's Ruin, Meteor City stuff that was coming out back in the late 90s, early 2000s, where that, at that time, metal had kind of hit the skids a little bit. You know, I'm an old school metalhead, but at that period, I really got converted over to doom and stoner rock and everything else, like a lot of folks did. So I got hooked on Orange Goblin and Sons of Otis and Fu Manchu and Caius and you know, Suplex out of New Orleans and all these great bands and Cathedral as well, where suddenly there was these riches of bands that were all kind of underground bands. You know, they were all sort of fighting it out on their own, and it was new and it was fantastic. And that's what really turned it for me, where I became, you know, a dyed in the wool, you know, doom stoner head.
2 comments to that one. Suplex fucking rules.
Oh, yeah.
And it always makes me laugh when I started reading about bands in this genre And when you look at kind of the early tours they got thrown on, and I just assume that's because marketers didn't know how to like present it, because everybody was like, well, you're thrash, you're fast, you're this, but we're not really sure what to do with you guys. So it's kind of funny where you see a band like Fu Manchu pop up on a tour with some, you know, I'm trying to think of like kind of an out there example, and I'm failing to do so, but I think you know what I mean. It's not like now where you can build an entire doom festival, for fuck's sake.
No, I mean, you had things, you know, you had like CMJ was still happening in New York City back the day. And so
I went a few years to that. That was a great time. Yeah.
And you had labels like small, you know, Scott, I'm pretty sure Scott, who ran Small Stone out of Michigan, Detroit, you know, they would occasionally do like nights for their bands. So I remember going to see like Halfway Gone and Puny Human and a couple other bands play. But yeah, it was, you'd see weird things. Like I remember seeing Caius play with Fear Factory and Megadeth, and nobody knew who Caius was. I remember seeing Clutch open for Prong on Transnational Speedway Tour, and like nobody knew who Clutch was, and they were just kind of this weird band because they weren't really like anything else. So yeah, back in those early days, like, you know, you had Monster Magnet, who was kind of already out, you had Caius, who was out there, but they were off doing their own things, and they had to do some pretty weird tours at that time. You know, and then the one band that people forget was around that early was like Solace was actually around that early, and Tommy was also around in Godspeed doing stuff with, and those were like, there were a lot of those New Jersey Brighton bar bands that nobody knew what to do with them. You know, they weren't metal bands. They were something completely different.
I'm embarrassed to say that I'm from New Jersey, and I just found out about Solace like at the end of December.
Well, it's good that you did. You got around them because they're a really important band, and especially I'm a New Jersey kid too.
Oh yeah, and whereabouts?
I grew up in Parsippany, New Jersey, where I'm gonna lay claim to fame to. That is also where JJ Kozan of the Obelisk is from. So both JJ and I grew up in the same hometown, many years apart. But yeah, I mean, Solace is a really important band who, you know, those guys just were always phenomenal and were just chugging away, you know, on their own sound. That, again, Solace is not metal, and you know, they're not doom. They're really their own thing. You know, Tommy likes to call it dirt metal, and that seems apt. But yeah, I love those guys to death, and I'm glad we've been able to play shows with them, become friends with them, because I consider that kind of an honor.
I can imagine. Yeah, they go back quite a long way. And the new record was pretty good. I dug it.
I would highly advise you dig through their back catalog, because 13, when I first heard that album, oh my God, that blew my mind. And the fact that they had a Wino cameo on that for Common Cause, like that tune I still listen to as much as I can, because I love that to death. But even the AD album, you know, it took them, what, 7 years to put that thing out because of bad luck and you know, lead singer-itis and other things. Like that album, so phenomenal. And it was great. You know, we had played a couple shows with them before the new album had come out, and they were playing new material and they were doing stuff. And I was so excited to finally hear that thing once it came out. And it does. They've earned all the accolades they've been getting, number one on Doom charts and everything else. Like, those guys have earned it.
Yeah, this is their time and their time and place. Now, when you're growing up in Parsippany and eventually New York, unless I'm skipping over something, like, what did you have? Were you in bands back then?
No, I mean, I was a drummer, but I never really played in bands until I actually lived in Ohio for a little bit. I was playing in some bands there. And when I started playing in bands there, you know, the big thing that was happening was Pantera and Down and stuff like that. And that was a big thing for me and the guys I was hanging out with. So I was playing more like Vinnie Paul style drums, a lot of double bass and stuff like that. But at that same time, that was right around the time that Church Within had hit. Again, the Down album had hit, which was also kind of a big thing because that led to a lot of people like myself discovering Trouble, Witchfinder General, all the bands they were kind of sub-referencing on that first NOLA album. And so that was something that the bands I was playing in, everybody started moving away from like Slayer and thrash metal and everything, and starting to weave more of that heavier downtune stuff in there. And that's really where, when I finally moved back east to New York City and wanted to start playing in bands again, the thing I always wanted to do was I wanted to do a band that was akin to the Obsessed and St. Vitus and I Hate God. And I wanted to do something in that direction. And that kind of led me to kind of trying to find some folks who wanted to do the same thing, you know. And so Hal, I knew through mutual friend, and Joe Wood is kind of a hilarious story. We put an ad in Craigslist, and Joe Wood was the only guy we ever auditioned, and he worked out perfectly.
Now, Joe's been in another band for a long time, because Eternal Black is not his first band.
No. And Joe has tons of experience in tons of bands, but he's been playing in Borgo Pass, I want to say, for 20 years. Or something like that. Like Joe comes from a family of drummers. So he's been playing drums. He probably came out of the womb playing drums, for God's sakes.
he's been around a while.
Yeah, I know at least one of his brothers, his sister. Like they're a family of drummers, and he's the type of guy. I think you've met him, where he's just one of those people who's born to do it. Like that guy's naturally got groove to what he does, and he hits like a son of a bitch. So he was the perfect find, and he was the only guy. You know, he and I were emailing back and forth, as you do in those want ads. You put in like, hey, you know, looking for people to form a doom band, influences this, and this. And he hit me up right away and was like, hey, I like the band you like. We started talking back and forth. He seemed like a decent guy. We brought him in, and right away I had sent him like a few ideas. I'd come, you know, riffs and things I'd come up with. Right away it clicked. And we knew both Hal and I looked at one another and were like, oh yeah, this is the guy. And we've been the same three guys all 5 years, knock on wood.
It seems to be the trifecta really works for this kind of music. And I don't really know what that is. I mean, it might just be the necessity of, this is all we need. We don't need anything else beyond that.
Maybe, you know, the trios, you know, you're right. There are a lot of trios in like the stoner doom scene. Although now there's a lot of duos, you know, a lot of folks are like, well, why do we even need a third guy? Let's cut it down. and then I guess the benefit is you only have to split the money two ways. So yeah, maybe that's a better way to go. But you know, I can't speak for any other band, but I know for us, we make a shit ton of noise. So if we tried to put somebody else in there, like, yeah, maybe it would just muddy up the sound. But, you know, part of, I think, what makes our sound is each guy's bringing a sort of a layer of sort of thickness to that overarching attack. And it just, you know, Joe just pummels the shit out of those drums. So because Joe's playing loud, I'm playing loud, Hal's playing loud, and it just makes this fantastic wall of noise that we think really makes us who we are.
Now, in the 5 years that you've been doing this, you guys have obviously have had to have some highlights that, you know, you look back on and say, wow, we never expected to be here where we were 2015. I mean, I think a cool thing that you guys did was when I saw you guys the first time at your Halloween show, which was a fucking trip. I had a really good time there. Well, it was really cool when you brought out Davey Gunner from Kraut, who, you know, I was not familiar with, but oddly enough, like, I was on the phone with my mom and she was asking about it. And I said, do you know this guy? And she's like, yeah, I do. Because she knew him from like back in the punk days. She's like, he was cool and he's still doing a thing. So, and which was really neat. It was just kind of a weird crossover of worlds.
Well, that was almost purposeful because I actually play in a band called End of Hope with Davey.
Right. Yeah. That was going to be my next point.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, that show, that was so damn amazing. And again, you're absolutely right. The big highlight for us was having Gunner come up and do All God's Fall with us, which is a song we don't play a lot. Again, because we come from more of the Wino school of things, we're not getting up and playing two songs over a 35-minute set, you know, and then just, we're not doing the long, slow thing. We're doing more the kind of old school punk influenced type of doom where we want shorter, punchier songs that kind of hit you square in the head rather than kind of dragging it out. So, but All God's Fall was the first thing I had ever written for the band. And so maybe because of that, it was still kind of steeped in that style of doing long, slow songs. But after a while, I kind of got tired of bands doing that. Mm-hmm. Especially going to a lot of shows where the songs are 12 minutes long. They're just riding the same riff over and over again. And I just, this is just me. I'm not saying those bands that do that are bad. I'm not saying bands that do that suck or anything. I'm just saying for me, I started to get a little bored with that. So I was purposely taking the songs I was writing for Eternal Black into a completely opposite direction. And I think because of that, also the fact that as a band, when you only have 35 minutes to play a song that's 12 minutes, that cuts out a lot of good songs that you could have played that could have won some folks over. So we didn't play that. We don't play that one a lot. And when I booked the Halloween show, Davey had approached me. He said, I want to sing a song with you guys. And I was like, absolutely. What do you want to sing? Because Davey's the, you saw him. He's incredible. He does something I can't do. And you know, I'm a singer by default because the rhythm section didn't want to do it. I wound up becoming the singer.
You're like, which, fuck it. I'll do it.
Yeah, which tends to happen in a lot of bands, so I'm mucking through it the best way I can. But you know, like Davey's a singer. Davey's a guy. Like the person I always think of akin to him is Earl Walker Lundy from Shadow Witch, who is like Earl's born to do it. Like Earl is a phenomenal frontman, and Davey's the same way. Like Davey's been doing it since he was 17 years old, and he got to open up for the Clash. Like he knows what to do as a frontman. So he was like, I want to sing All God's Fall. That's my favorite song. And I'm like, okay. And more than happy to have him do it with us. And then he was ready for the first rehearsal we were going to do with him. And he's like, I even wrote some extra lyrics. I'm like, what? And like, he came in with extra lyrics. And I'm like, you wrote extra lyrics to my song? He's like, yeah, you're going to love it. Check it out. Wait till you hear it. And he's like that. He's an endless bundle of enthusiasm. And that's what I love about the guy. And that's why I love playing an End of Hope with him. And sure enough, we came in, the first time we ran through it, and he broke out all these extra lyrics, and he did things with the song. He interpreted it in his way. He interpreted it and did something with it that I never would have done. And I'm like, God damn, that is really cool. And we all, the three of us, me, Joe, and Hal, all sat there going, man, that's really, really cool. So that each time he came back, he'd add a little more, So what you saw was this wonderful kind of Gunner's interpretation of what that song should be. And, you know, that being the last song for a hell of a night like that. Yeah, that was a definite highlight.
Shit, why didn't we think of this?
You know, yeah, it was one of those things. I'm like, oh, yeah, that vocal part there, that's brilliant. That's really, really good. And, you know, I didn't have any vocals in those. Like, because I had left a bunch of space. I'm more of like, when it comes to lyrics, I tend to be like more like a haiku writer. I want to use the minimal amount of lyrics because I'm trying to say a lot with a little. Whereas Gunner's approach is saying a lot with a lot. And he added so much to it. And, you know, I think the combination of, you know, this may not come across to everybody who's just listening to this as a podcast, but we came out covered in blood, you know, all on our faces and clothes and everything else. And so that was our trip for the Halloween show, that we were going to come out in this like bloody set, which fits our music and the lyrical content. And then Av Gunner, we told him like, we're going to be all messed up. You should come out in a suit, which
he did.
And he came out in a suit like he was Nick Cave, and he belted out that number. And there's video of it online. If you search End of Hope, All God's Fall Live, you can find it on YouTube, and it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite things.
I just assumed he dressed like that normally. So
No. Like we were all talking about it, and he's like, well, what are you guys going to do? And I had already had the plan to make fake blood and to basically come out like we had just butchered somebody in the back alley. Because if you read read the lyrics I'd written for the songs, there's a lot of discussion of blood and things going wrong. He was like, that's really cool. And I'm like, but you know what? It'd be even cooler if you came out in a suit. So you're clean cut, and we're like the backup band for you. And again, I'm a huge Nick Cave fan, so I was thinking of it like that way.
It was a very, it was a unique presentation. And I personally speaking, I'm all for a little extra showmanship in that regard, you know? So I have, I like the face paint and masks and I like that kind of stuff, so I definitely appreciated that.
Yeah, and that Halloween show, that was really, you know, I had the idea, you know, back over the summer, and I was admittedly a little frustrated with, you know, it's kind of tough for a lot of the bands in New York City right now, especially in the stoner doom scene, where there's a lot of people into the music, that the style of music that we make, but it's actually kind of hard for bands from the area to get on good shows. Or to put on shows that a lot of folks are going to come out for. And I wanted to put on something that would be like, you need to be here for this show. And I wanted to see if we could kind of establish something that folks would know and remember, and so every year would keep coming back to. And I think we did that really well. And one of the things I wanted to make sure that we did was pick bands that are going to do something interesting visually. And that was another thing where, again, I've seen a bunch of bands in the stoner doom scene who just kind of get up and just kind of lay back, and they're not moving around a lot. And I know that's kind of a thing, but it's sort of like I was getting a little bored with it. And so I'm like, yeah, let's do a full-on show where each band's going to come out and bring something unique and that's very visual. And so, you know, the guys in Dead Satellites, they're rehearsal room buddies of ours. We share the space with them. I knew they would come out with something really interesting. So the masks and the lights, and normally they'll have video and stuff up there. They didn't that night, but they still looked really cool and they were awesome. Then Clouds Taste Satanic, they always have their visual light show and the smoke and the lasers. And, like, they're out doing Dio with all the effects they've got up there. And then Goat Wizard from Bethlehem, PA, who we've played with a ton of times, and they're always fantastic. And Todd, the lead singer, always has his wizard mask on and the staff and everything. But then they all came in costume and we knew they would be great. And that's where, you know, normally we're a very meat and potatoes band, Norm. We're usually very much like, let's just go up and attack. And it's going to be the sound and the intensity of it that gets people into it. But we knew we had to do something different, you know, this time around, hence the blood. And then Rain Isaias, how can you not enjoy a bunch of dudes in ape masks singing songs about Planet of the Apes and RoboCop? And they even brought a fake atomic bomb with them. Like, how do you not enjoy that? That was the type of spectacle I really wanted to have for a Halloween show. And it worked out awesome. So we're going to do it again next year. So I've already got the date booked. Shadow Witch is already confirmed for it. So we're definitely going to do something really cool next year again.
And it's Saturday.
Yeah. And even better, like, as soon as I saw that it was a Saturday, and the day or two after we had done this year's show, Earl from Shadow Witch hit me up. He's like, you know, I love Halloween, and you know, I like doing the Halloween shows. I really want to do the Halloween show next year. I'm like, all right, we'll make it happen.
That's awesome. I'm going to do my best to make a return to that because I had such a good time. Sort of backtracking, you're talking about the whole aesthetic and whatnot, which it did look like somebody just took a paintbrush to Joe's face and just like turned him into a beat, essentially. But you're talking about the lyrical content. So are you the primary lyricist for the band? And like, what are some of your influences when you're putting together a song?
Yeah, I mean, I write everything for the band, you know, riffs and all, and the lyrics as well. And, you know, again, musically, I'm pulling a lot from the bands that really influenced me, which again is Black Sabbath and The Obsessed and I Hate God and Corrosion of Conformity, and I could name a million others. But you know, I'm trying to take that old sound and I'm trying to drag it into a more modern sound in terms of our approach. And in there is also some punk influences, and there's a little bit of black metal in there too, and some other things, but not in a way where it sounds like a fusion and a hodgepodge. I think the thing I realized being a somewhat older guy was I kind of missed the ugliness that you felt when you first heard The Obsessed and Saint Vitus and those bands. And that a lot of the stuff I was hearing was, it sounded heavy because it was tuned down to B or tuned down to A sharp or whatever, but it was sort of more pleasant, you know, it sort of coasted and it sort of didn't have the sort of abrasive sound that I actually kind of liked in doom. And so I wanted to get that back. And so lyrically, you know, the people that really influenced me in terms of lyrics are guys like Nick Cave and Mark Lanegan and actually John Lee Hooker, you know, and some of the old blues guys, because there's a lot of pain and a lot of hurt in all those lyrics. And I like what both Mark Lanegan and Nick Cave have always done, where there's a story in there. So I want the lyrics to give you a sense of place, to make you feel like you're almost trapped within it. And you can see the landscape or whatever the hell I'm talking about within there. Cause I'm not a Dungeons and Dragons guy, and I don't want to sing songs about wizards and witchy women and stuff like that. I tend to not write any of the kind of tropes that kind of get discussed a lot. I tend to write like, this should be a really vicious, horrible old blues song is what it should be, and that's usually what I'm going for.
I think that's really more, it gives it a bit more nuance than what you're talking about, because, you know, as much as I love the genre, there is some oversaturation. What I've always said to people, well, more recently, is that, you know, you can have a doom band, but really when you have a doom band or any of the subgenre, like when they hit home and you know it. It stands out above the rest.
Yeah, yeah.
You get that resonance. You're like, oh, this is something special.
But no, I think, you know, we were talking about Solace. If you go back to Solace, there's always been something really distinct about them. And often something hard you can peg. You know, you can talk about their sound and you're like, well, you know, there's a little bit of Iron Maiden in that sound because they're doing the twin harmony things every once in a while. Or, you know, it's a two guitar attack and stuff. And then, yeah, there's a little bit of Sabbath in there, but it's so damn unique and it's so them. But the thing that underneath it all that always made me dig those guys is like there's a scuzziness and there's a grime to it that was why I liked that music in the first place. Like when I first heard Orange Goblin, what won me over with Orange Goblin wasn't the like more trippy sort of looser mellow parts. Like it was just the attack and just the like, oh my, like hearing, you know, Quincy the Pig Boy or Scorpionica for the first time. And you're like, Jesus, what is that? Like who plays like that? And that's what I try as much as I can. And we as a band try as much as we can to do that. We want to be that band that, yeah, we may not be the current flavor of the month. We may not be as easy to kind of latch onto. We just want you to kind of sit there and go like, Jesus, you know, and at least kind of just feel that sort of wall of noise hit you with a good shot, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I get what you're saying. And I guess even going back before that, just go back some like career highlights for you guys. You know, you talked about doing the Halloween show and having Davey come out, and mm-hmm. now your other band with him called End of Hope, which I dug the hell out of that record you guys put out. I really enjoyed that. That was
thanks, man. That means a lot to me. I'm really proud of that record. So
that record kicked ass, and it felt classic, but without it feeling trite or anything. Because I've definitely heard, I don't know if you would call it like throwback punk or sort of like these weird bands that kind of think that this is what punk is, but that kind of just always seemed to be like what the facade of like the media presented punk as. And this isn't like what I would consider what punk rock is today. Like there's a great Canadian band called Pup, and they're a punk rock band, and I'm like, that is a punk rock band and not some stupid version that's essentially like the Ramones or whatnot. This felt like you guys took the essence of hardcore and punk rock and you shot some thrash and like a little bit of doom into it, but not 100% doom or anything like that. It just felt felt real.
That means the world to me, man. Cause that, you know, that band, we have so much fun in that band. And a lot of it was Davey said to me like, hey, if you ever want to work on something, I'd love to do something with you. You know, we got along from the first day we met, and his band Bowhead at the time used to play shows with Eternal Black. And, you know, I don't know if it's because two Italian idiots, both from the East Coast, but we, you know, we got along pretty damn well. And he was just like, hey, if you ever want to do anything, let me know. And I had this idea for a long time of like, I want to do a band that's Motorhead meets Black Flag. Cause I always saw the through line of those two bands. And the other thing was, you know, I've been a fan of old school punk and hardcore for a long time, but the thing I think coming from the metal side of things, you know, because there's two avenues. Like there are people who were punk and then they got into metal later. You know, they found Slayer and other stuff and they came through. Whereas then there were people like me who were metalheads first, and then all your metal bands started playing punk covers and you're like, oh, what's this over here? And you went the other way. And the thing I always loved about Black Flag was their guitar sound was always big. It was just big and loud. And so I'm like, you know, Black Flag, you know, like Motorhead, were just this bigger band. They were bigger than everything else. And I'm like, there's a connection between those two. And so when I threw that at Gunner, he's like, brilliant, I want to do it, let's do it. And so I do the same thing in Eternal Black, where I write a lot for Joe Wood. I tend to write for what I think Joe can do. So as I'm thinking about parts, I'm like, oh, I kind of know what Joe would do here. Or I hope Joe would do this here. Same thing with End of Hope. Like I write to fit Davey. You know, I write to fit where, you know, and everybody in that band sort of comes in and we just start attacking those songs and removing all the fat. pulling everything out. So in the end, you know, what might have been a 3 or 4 minute song is now a 2 minute song, and it's tight. You can't find a wasted note, you know, a wasted lyric, anything. Like, it is the best that song could be, and it's so much energy and so much fun because it's faster, high speed, punchy shit with just a real thick sound. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I also like that there's a little bit of banter from, like, the process, you know, the recording process. I've always appreciated that, not when it's overdone, but I like hearing that because it gives it that sense of, like, you're sort of there, it's real, it's natural, but also at the same time, it gives it that sense of, like, it's not 100% perfect. And that's what I've always liked about the old recordings, is that if you picked up, like, an old punk vinyl and the cover is all scratched and you put it on and it sounds good, but it sounds the way the cover looks. I like that. I love that. I love that about just records in general too.
Yeah. Like, I remember when the first Helicopters album came out, and I was such a massive Entombed fan, and I respect, really still to this day, respect everything Nicky Anderson had done. And so when the Helicopters album came out, I'm like, oh, I want to hear what this guy's doing. I want to hear this. And at first I'm like, whoa, what the fuck is this? This is like a punk rock and roll album. And then it was that really garagey sound where the drums sounded like they just stuck a single mic hanging off a rafter down. And it took me like a day or two to come around to it. And then it became one of my favorite albums because I'm just like, it's so raw. It's beautiful. Like, it's so just live sounding. And I think that's the thing, like, you know, today anybody can have a spectacular sounding album. The harder thing is to have an organic sort of feels like you're there seeing the band album, because everybody's got really good recording techniques, but it's kind of like I love the new Dark Throne albums because they just are so raw and spectacular. And you're just like, yep, I know it's those two guys in the room just belting it out, and there's such vitality to it.
I'm tending to see that in, like, the new death metal movement that's been going on with bands like Gatecreeper and Tomb Mold, and it's like, holy shit, these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, but then there are bands like False Gods from here in New York City. Like, those guys have that in their sound, you know. I think, you know, Begotten, who we play a lot too, like, have that in their sound as well. So, you know, our scene has it. The bands are there. And that's the things I tend to gravitate more to, that stuff, when, you know, there's a lot of bands who there's a lot of polish in that sound. And like I said, or it's even, you know, even though it sounds heavy, it's kind of pleasant sounding. It's almost soothing in a way. And not that that's always wrong. Like, sometimes you want that sound. But I'm a little off in the head, so I tend to like the stuff that has that sort of, like, yeah, this I can almost picture myself in the rehearsal room with these guys belting it out.
It's like that early, like, Pacific Northwest sound, like when you're getting like a band like Kane or Thor's Hammer, where it's just, you could kind of feel and taste and see the scratches in the music. But
it gives it
that something that it's hard to describe.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting, like, metal in the late 90s, early 2000s, like, the recording techniques, you know, got too good.
Mm-hmm.
So you had bands who were heavy bands, but it was just like, you could hear every bass drum hit. You could hear everything was too compressed. Everything was too perfect. And it lost something in the, you know, it lost a sort of vitality to it, I think. And I think, you know, part of the reason there's been this resurgence in stoner doom when it first sort of swung back, because it did die for a little bit in the mid 2000s there, you know, after Man's Ruin folded and Meteor City kind of stopped doing as much, and, you know, Rise Above was kind of carrying the torch, but, you know, there wasn't as much happened mid 2000s. And then it sort of swung back again, I think, because there were a lot of bands who were bringing that sort of fresh, vital, you know, rawer sound. And then, as happens over time, I think we've swung a little too far back now to the cleaner sounding doom. And, you know, my hope is that things are cyclical, that's going to swing back, and the more rawer sounding stuff is going to come back again.
So for you, like, what, you know, you guys are a pretty significant part of, like, the new, probably, like you just said, like, beyond just the doom scene in New York City, which has been really burgeoning as of late. You know, what's that been like for you to be, you know, an active member of the New York City heavy metal scene in, 2020, you know, because New York City has its history of metal bands, but right now there's a very, very, very strong presence of heavy metal in New York City. It's really like starting to permeate into the greater lexicon.
Yeah, it's, you know what, admittedly, it's kind of weird where there are certain bands that are doing great. Like, I'll give a shout out to Sanhedrin, who,
yes, I don't,
if you've heard them or seen them play live, like, they've earned every accolade they got. They're phenomenal. I love that new album. And they go play Europe, and I'm sure they're playing for far bigger crowds in Europe than maybe they are here. You know, you have places like St. Vitus and Lucky 13 that are considered, you know, sort of meccas for heavy music. You know, Manhattan doesn't really have anything anymore. You know, the Continental is long gone, and a lot of places that used to be, you know, CBGB's is long gone. So in some ways you have these places that are on the outskirts, and there's still tons of people into heavy music, but it's a little more scattered now. And also a lot of places have shut down. It's also, I think things have become a bit more stratified. So what you have is the big bands can come and play, and they can go play St. Vitus, or they can go play one of the bigger joints in Manhattan or whatever, or Brooklyn Steel and stuff like that. But it's actually, I think, gotten a little harder for bands like us, you know, and the bands we play with, where it's kind of hard to build and get the shows you want to sort of help the bands, you know, get a little more notice. And so that's why I wound up doing things like the Halloween show that we did, or trying to make sure that when we're booking shows that, you know, we're trying to get bands that are growing like us and that folks will know, so you can get some more bodies in the door. But it's actually, you know, the funny part is when we were talking about highlights, you know, some of the big highlights for us have been going to play the festivals, because there's actually a good Stoner Doom festival kind of circuit between the Maryland Doom Fest, New England Stoner and Doom, and then Descendants of Crom in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And we've played all three of those, and all three of those have been highlights for us. And we've done Maryland Doomfest twice now. Second time was way better than the first. Not that the first sucked. The first was awesome. But this time was even better. And we played to a nice, good, packed room. And we're going back to play New England Stoner and Doomfest this time. So, like, those are always highlights, because you've got the community out. And people are there. And everybody's happy to see one another. And everybody's supporting the bands. And that was really what I was going for with that Halloween show, was I wanted that same type of atmosphere. Because in New York City right now, I think the big exception is Claudia Crespo and Ode to Doom. She's doing such a phenomenal job of trying to build those marquee nights once a month that folks know to show up for. And I think she's doing a phenomenal job with that.
Yeah, I had recorded an episode with her, actually, the last Ode to Doom of 2019. So she was in a few episodes back. But yeah, she's great. And obviously, we'll be seeing her next week for the Ode to Doom in January. But yeah, I can only imagine those festivals are a lot of fun. I mean, I've been out to Psycho Las Vegas, which is, you know, a bit of a step up from those. The festivals that you're talking about, and probably Maryland Doom Fest, is probably in terms of scale a little bit bigger. But you know, and I know this just from talking to Shy, like, you know that the festival, like Descendants of Crom, it's a labor of love. I'm sure it's like a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but at the end of the day, like you said, it's an amazing weekend, an amazing experience. I'm going to definitely try to make it up this year. It just worked out a little bit better, but I know what you're saying in terms of that's where you get to see, like, the community. That's where you get to see the people come out. Like, that's sort of like your, I don't know, I don't want to call it target, but that's where you're remembering the best of times, right?
Yeah. And I mean, and that's it, because, you know, it's weird. New York City, it's always the thing of, like, you could be well known in New York City and somebody's still going to give you shit, you know,
right?
Somebody's still going to snub you, you know, or not book you on a bill that you think you should be on. That's just part of being a band from New York City. So, you know, it's great for us, especially for a band like us, who are so steeped in that Maryland Doom tradition. It's great for us to be able to go and play for a ton of people at Maryland Doom Fest. And it always makes us feel really good that, like, JB and the folks who work there treat us really good.
And same thing with going up to New England Stoner Doom, where it's Scott and Dwayne who run that and do a great job up there, where it's like we have bands that we've played with up there that we don't get to see, you know, unless, you know, we happen to go play a show up there. So it's like suddenly you got everybody together. And it's this wonderful, you know, community of folks who are all out there to support the music, and you see old friends you haven't seen in a while. And, you know, it's just, it's always fantastic. And especially because Psycholock Las Vegas is expensive. It's a bit of a trip to get out there. Same thing with Roadburn. Like, you know, Roadburn's a bit of a trip to get over there, and you know, or Bloodstock or any other festivals in Europe. So it's kind of cool that within, you know, 4 to 6 hours or 2 hours, you know, we have three really solid festivals on the East Coast here that are just a blast to play. And I feel lucky that we've been able to play all three of them.
I hope to catch you guys at one of them at some point. That would be a trip. Kind of a weird question, but when I was in the process of Googling you guys, are you also the author Ken Woolrob?
That is me, yeah.
That is you. Okay, because yeah. It's not a common name, so...
No, I'm the only one out there as far as I know, so...
How did that kind of pan out? And, like, did you ever have to balance, like, the band writing thing, or is that just sort of another facet of your life?
It's another facet, but the simple truth is, once I started Eternal Black, and then End of Hope as well, like, I haven't written a damn story since then. Mm-hmm. So 100% of my energy is really been in the bands. You know, I'm a reading fool, so I always have a book wherever I'm going to, and you know, I always read, and I always wanted to be write stories and do that. So I started writing short stories, and then wrote one novel, and you know, I actually learned a lot of valuable lessons trying to promote the books that got put out by just having to build up a community of people to read them. And a lot of having to do that sort of like reaching out to folks on your own, reaching out to reviewers and engaging with folks, you know, online. And, you know, all of that was a great lesson for then. Once I started playing in bands, I kind of had a way of going about it, you know, and I think part of the success we've had with Eternal Black and also now End of Hope is, you know, put a ton of time into promoting the bands and reaching out to folks and to trying to get people to review our records, because we're very DIY. We don't have a label that does it for us. You know, unless we have some extra money, we don't have, you know, a PR person that can help us out. So, you know, we got to do it all by ourselves. And usually that means you got to email folks directly. You got to send out your download codes. You got to do all of that. But that's the really fun part of being in a band, is just building this thing up. And you know, like, there's nothing I love more than doing the vinyl. Mm-hmm. And just that project and being able to create something and get it out there and seeing how excited folks are when they start posting photos of it on their turntables on Instagram. Like, I love that. Because it, you know, it, hey, we handmade this. And part of the reason we brought Dave from Made in Brooklyn Silk Screeners, who does our t-shirts, and Dave does t-shirts for everybody, for I Hate God and for Conan and just about everybody. I was really inspired by what the Swans are now doing with their albums and CDs, where Michael Gerard's like hand stamping them and they're printed on like uncoated stock and all that. Like, his whole approach was like, it's handmade. I'm making this for you. And we wanted to do the same exact thing. We're like, I've gone to shows and bought albums directly from bands, because I always try to support the bands I really like, or I order, you know, albums online. And sometimes it's a little disappointing when you just get the black vinyl and it's just an offset printed jacket, and you're like, I wish I got something a little more. And so we were, you know, I talked the guys into, we can do this a different way, and we can make this kind of hand printed. So we actually had Dave hand silk screen the covers. We numbered everyone. We signed everyone. We didn't charge people extra to get an autographed one. You know, we didn't throw in like a jigsaw puzzle or any other bells and whistles. We were like, make it feel handmade and make it feel really cool for the people that are buying it. And I love doing that stuff. And you know, I think that's why people have responded so well, like the vinyl version of the new album.
I remember seeing the videos and you talking about how it was hand printed, and I thought that was a really cool way to make it, like you said, stand out against the rest. And vinyl is huge in this genre right now, and it's you know, for a multitude of reasons. I think a lot of it is just, like you said, the effort, and you put it, when you get it, it's a different color, it's a splatter, it's rainbow, it's whatever, so it's just a regular, like you said, sort of, you know, black stock vinyl, you know. And then of course there's the artwork, and that's one thing I'll always say about this genre. It probably has some of the best artwork in all of music, in my opinion, because I love all the aesthetic. But whether it's the aesthetic that you guys are going for, like Weedian's or John Baisley's work, like all of it is just really remarkable. And then you get to some of the higher concept stuff, but it gives it sort of a chase factor to it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It gives people like, ooh, I want that. And it looks, it's very photogenic, and it's eye popping. And it's, you know, it's a unique way that, you know, you don't see bigger artists sort of going after when, and I guess they don't have to because they have everybody at their beck and call. But it gives it that sort of chase factor to it, where people are like, it looks amazing, I want this.
You know, the only thing I will say, you know, there is great artwork. And you know, I want to give a shout. I'll shout out to Jad from Blues Funeral. Like, what he did with that EP series, that was fantastic. You know, so like that big Scenic Nowhere album, I got that one. I got the Domcraft one. Like, those were all the thematic through line of how the artwork was done. Like, I thought he just knocked it out of the park with that stuff. And I think that guy who used to, you know, he's from back in the day, he used to run Meteor, you know, Meteor City. And so he knows what he's doing, and he's doing such amazing stuff with Blues Funeral right now that it's really cool to see that stuff. But on the opposite side of, like, we got to stop with the cartoon tits. That's the one thing that's just so embarrassing. It's like, if you had to hold, if you're like, really, like, how adolescent can you get? You just got a pair of cartoon tits on your cover. Like, that's just hilarious and ridiculous. So that's like a running joke. And it's funny because I know there's like other bands we talk to whenever, and it's like, if you just mention cartoon tits, like, everybody just starts going like, yeah, that's got to stop.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think it's just, it seems old. It doesn't seem like a new thing. It seems like something we should probably just be kind of leaving in the past. Like, that sort of era is kind of done, and there's still just, you know, some sticklers, you know, still on there. And I'm not trying to get down on anybody, because I know they're trying to promote and have their artwork and make it pop and whatnot. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. Probably best to move on from the cartoon tits.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, there's a few folks who did it early on, and it was like, okay, you're trying to be edgy by having that on there, and then it just became like, man, I'm just seeing these everywhere. This is you're getting the sense there's a lot of lonely dudes who just like cartoon tits after a while.
Draw them bigger.
yeah, like, can you make them bigger and just have her hold a big sword in between the cartoon tits, you know? And it's starting to become a little obvious after a while.
It's like 90s comic book artwork.
Yeah, and the funny part is, not even in a cool Frank Frazetta type of way. Like, you'd almost be like, all right, well, I'll let it go. It's kind of a cool fantasy painting. Like, no, it's weirdly cartoony and just odd.
Well, to segue away from the cartoon tits, you know, normally what we would do on this podcast is talk about a certain band of the week, but I didn't want to do that because, you know, we're talking about your band.
Okay.
Is there a band that's out now? And I know you've talked about a lot of bands, you know, over the last hour or so, and all ones and that you love and the ones that have influenced you. But is there anybody, you know, recent time that you can think of that you're like, you know, I really love this band, and you love championing them to other people and saying, like, you have to, like, check them out. You know, they really stand out above the rest. Is there anybody like that you would, you know, suggest people out there check out?
Jesus, I could go on forever. You know, the one I always bring up first is Leeds Point out of, I mean, technically they're a Long Island band, but they're not from too far out on Long Island. But if you've ever met anybody who knows them or has seen them play live or has heard their music, they will be evangelical about how good those guys are, because they're absolutely phenomenal. And it's scary because they're really young kids, at least compared to me. They're young. I mean, they're not that young anymore, but I still think of them as kids. and they're so incredibly talented. And I always have moments where we'll bring a band from out of town. A good example I can use is we brought Curse the Sun from Connecticut down to play with us. We got Leeds Point to play on the bill. And I was talking to Rozzy from Curse the Sun. And I'm like, what do you see this band Leeds Point? You know, I was trying to describe them to him. And, you know, people always do that and talk about bands. And he was just like, all right, whatever, man. You know, you obviously like this band, sure. And then as soon as they got done, he came up to me and he was just like, oh, my God. And I'm like, yep, they're that good. Like, you can't beat them. So they have a new album out. Go seek them out. They're such an awesome band. And the guys are kind of, they're not shy, but they kind of, they're very low key in terms of how they promote themselves. So I think that's why a lot, you know, maybe not as many folks know about them. But the one cool thing that happened was the Obelisk just published their readers poll. And I think they made the top 10 in there. So like I said, people who know them and hear them are evangelicals. Obviously, a ton of folks went and voted for them, as they should, because their new album, Equinox Blues, is just awesome. But you should go listen to all their stuff.
Duly noted. I just wrote their name down, and I'm going to check it out. Leeds Point. Okay. I should probably spell it right.
Yeah, it's L-E-E-D-S and, you know, point.
Is that named after Mother Leeds?
I have no idea. You'd have to ask the guys about that.
I'll ask them. I'll have to get them on the podcast, and we'll talk about that. All right. I'm going to definitely check them out. I love hearing what bands like to listen to, because I've actually heard that, like, when bands are, like, not really, you know, when they're not in the creative process, they listen to a lot of stuff, but during the creative process, they don't listen to as much music. Is that applicable to you too?
No, I'm always listening to music. Yeah, like, again, if I'm doing flyers or something for the band or one of the bands or whatever, like, I'm listening to music. If I'm at work, I'm listening to music. If I'm walking to go get coffee, I'm listening to music. I think I'm one of those people where I'm constantly soaking things in.
Sure. Yeah. You and I are like that. I just need the constant flow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm one of those people where I tend to do it where I let all that stuff come in, and then it comes out in weird ways later when I'm working on riffs or playing with the bands or whatever, like something comes out and later on I'll be like, oh, I know where that came from, and, you know, and not realize it at the time. But hearing it, you know, hearing it after it's been recorded or something, like, oh, yeah, oh, that's a Satyricon thing I picked up. All right. Yeah, I got it. You know,
cool. But obviously, the reason we're talking about this is because we have, the, as I mentioned, Ode to Doom show coming up next week.
January 15th.
Yes, January 15th. So it's you guys. And then also we've got Dutch Guts, and Yatra was originally on the list, but had to drop out because they're working on something else that was just going to take up the time. And it's I'm failing to remember the other two bands on the bill.
It's going to be Sigils is on there, and the Druids.
Yes, those two. So that's at Arlene's Grocery, as it always is, on Wednesday. And we'll have this episode up this coming Thursday. At the time we're recording this, it's January 6th. So you still have a lot of time to pick up your ticket to that show. You should definitely go. It's a great, as we mentioned many times on this podcast, it's a great showcase. And Claudia does an amazing job putting it together. Very intimate and a lot of fun. And the bands are always great.
Again, it's where you, if you make it out one night to go see some bands, like, always pick that Ode to Doom night, because Claudia does a fantastic job of bringing really good bands in. And you'll probably see a band that you didn't know about that you'll then really dig.
Most certainly. But beyond that, do you guys have anything else that you're working on right now that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, we are also going to be playing our first show in Baltimore in February. So on February 22nd, we're actually playing, it's a hell of a bill. It's Heavy Temple, Shadow Witch, us, and Haze Mage playing at Oliver Brewing Company in Baltimore. So we're really excited. That's our first time. Even though we've played Maryland Doomfest, we've never actually played in Baltimore. And that's going to be our first time down there. And then, like I said, we're going to be back at New England Stoner and Doomfest. So this year, we're actually playing the pre-party on the Thursday, which is going to be May 14th. And that's a phenomenal bill, too, where that's going to be Scuzzy Yeti, Book of Worms, us, our brothers in False Gods from New York City as well, and Dust Prophet.
Book of Worms is great. We talked about them on the podcast recently. Really, really, really like them. And anything else in the works for in terms of like recording, or is you just focused on doing the shows right now?
We're actually working on the next album already. We've already got 4 songs written, but in the meantime, we're just focusing on shows, and we literally just got the vinyl out in December or so. So we still have pretty new out the vinyl version of Slow Burn Suicide that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and you should definitely check out Slow Burn Suicide. It's a really great record that Eternal Black put out last year. You can buy it over at their... I'll let you do that part. Like, where can people throw their wads of cash at you?
You can buy tons of stuff from us at eternalblack.bandcamp.com.
Go there. And you guys, you're on Instagram, Facebook, and all that other stuff?
Yep, everywhere we can be, yep.
So you just type in Eternal Black and you'll find them out there in the interwebs. But yeah, definitely go to Ode to Doom next week and check out those other festivals if you can. Tell the boys they're doing a good job. They're doing a great job keeping this scene alive. We appreciate it. And I'm super excited for next Wednesday. I'll be there with my intrusive camera.
Well, thanks so much, man. Really appreciate you doing this.
No problem. Just want to thank Ken again for coming on. And you can follow us, the Diary of Doom, on Instagram at Diary of Doom. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Diary of Doom. And subscribe and listen to the podcast on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Diary of Doom. You can also visit the Diary of Doom website. It's a work in process. It doesn't look that amazing right now. So if you have any suggestions or questions about that, you can fire off an email to diaryofdoom1968@gmail.com. And that will do it for this entry in the diary. Ken, again, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time out of your Monday. I'm sure you'd rather be chilling.
No problem at all, man. Thank you so much for having me on.